Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Okay. So in the verse 3 that we did yesterday, Aneka Janma Bhajanat Swavicharam Chikirashati Vicharena Vinashtayam Mayayam Shishate Swayam. From worship or the recognition of Ishwara, that relationship with Bhagavan, through Dharma, we could say even because of fifth case, because of so many births of that devotion to Bhagavan and to Dharma. Devotion to Bhagavan and Dharma are kind of the same. It's operationalized. Bhagavan is Dharma, and Dharma is Bhagavan. It's not two separate things. That's important to realize, that the natural order of this creation is Dharma. That's like the order. The laws of the creation are all, in every respect, Dharma. Even the physical laws are Dharma. The emotional laws are Dharma. Psychological laws are Dharma. Punya and Papa, you know, all exist in the form of Dharma. So Ishwara is, in a sense, an expression of Ishwara. Is an expression of Dharma. Dharma is an expression of Ishwara, like that. And so it's that devotion to Ishwara, which also manifests in the form of Dharma, in the form of ahimsa, in the form of the golden rule, in the form of kindness, because those are all the natural swarupa, the natural nature of Ishwara, which has for its adhishtana, for its very basis, the Satchitatma. So the Satchitatma yourself is non-dual Dharma. That's who you are. That's who Brahma is. Non-dual Dharma means non-dual ananda, or wholeness, or fullness, which expresses as this creation. And so when, as a jiva, you are in line with Dharma, you feel at one with Ishwara. Whatever you think Ishwara is, whatever that God image is, you feel at one with that and contained in that, because the nature of your antakarana has a depth of shanti. It's a deeper shanti even than the fulfillment of your desires, because the fulfillment of desires are filled with threat. The little ananda you enjoy from fulfilling your desires come along with a recognition of the temporary nature and fragile nature of that ananda that you're receiving from the fulfillment of a desire. Whereas the ananda, the natural ananda is there when a person is committed to Dharma, or there's a commitment to that relationship with Ishwara that is primary. That sense of sorrow, underlying sorrow, is not there at all in the same way. I think it's because there is no sense of isolation when one's within Dharma and held within that relationship with Ishwara. The mind has a different type of shanti, a different type of well-being, a different sense of being held. And so a dharmi, somebody who's a dharmi that has that commitment or that devotion to Bhagawan in whatever form that devotion takes, has a lot more inner space, I would say, a lot more inner beautiful space inside. And so from bhajana, from the bhajana, the kind of the worship of Bhagawan in whatever form, through many births, one gains a desire to do vichara, means to do one's own vichara. All that means is to do shravana, manana, nididhyasana, to find a teacher to do the shravana, manana, nididhyasana, so that one can gain knowledge of oneself. That desire arises. And then, by means of that vichara, again, that vichara is shravan from the bhasha, but it's obvious within the context, that vichara is shravana, manana, nididhyasana, that exposure to the pramana. When that takes place, then vinashtayam, mayayam. Then it says just literally, when maya, the whole maya, is resolved. Resolved means it's recognized for what it is. It is exactly what it is, but that what's not known about it is that it's mitya, not satyam. And so the mityatva of the creation becomes known, which then, when that becomes known through the pramana, then what? Shishyate swayam, the self alone, remains. Because there is no, there's not two between the adhishtana, what is satyam, what actually exists, and mithya, which has a 100% dependent existence. So it's like you and your shadow, I said yesterday. You know, the shadow has no being apart from you. You know, you see it, you experience it, so you can't say it's not there. But it's totally dependent on you for its being. You know, clay pot, rope snake, all of these. The mithya, whatever is mithya, has no being at all apart from the adhishtana. And so you can't call it as a second thing because there's only one existent being there. So that's the satya-mithya relationship. So when I understand this whole creation as mithya, then I alone am. Then when the body drops, having gone through all of the prarabdha karma, you gain knowledge somewhere in the middle, and then the karma keeps on continuing, your life keeps on continuing. Then once the body drops, then this upadhi is no longer, even while living, is no longer subject to ajnanam. So the ahankara, the raga dvesha, everything that one experiences falls into, for you, as a jnani, falls into that category of mithya, which means mithya not just as a concept, but that you always recognize yourself as the very self-evident presence, changeless, self-evident me, as all of this mithya is swirling, right? Because the mithya, the creation, is in continual change, but you're the adhishtana, you're the invariable. And that is what we call aparoksha. Aparoksha means you don't need a sense organs or your mind or some sort of vritti to confirm that fact, because you are that fact. And that fact, being conscious being, is its own experience with or without a pramana. Pramana is not required for your self experience because you are consciousness. But the pramana is required to remove the ajnanam, which has brought about this, what we call anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition, born of ignorance. That's what the pramana is for. The pramana is not giving you knowledge of yourself, that you're already self-evident. You know, so that's not the knowledge. The knowledge has to do with the viveka, discrimination that's required, so that the self that you are and always have been and always will be is differentiated from this creation, and this creation then takes some teaching, is recognized as being mithya, having no being apart from me. And that becomes, that recognition becomes also aparoksha, means it's a direct, immediate. You don't gain knowledge, and then you can't say, oh, okay, here it is, here's the conscious being that I am. You are that, so you can't objectify it. But you are that, and yourself is self-evident. So, and the mityatva is also absolute, it's pratyaksha, it's evident in every way. But it's evident through understanding, through logic. Because everything that you experience, every vritti, the content of every experience comes into being and goes out of being. There are no exceptions. The vrittis themselves come into being and go out of being. And everything within the vritti comes into being and goes out of being. The only stability there is Brahman, which is a great stability. Because that's something you can never move from. You are that, and it's non-dual, and so there's no movement, there's no wavering. It is strong. So it's absolute strength. In a sense, there's no second thing to tip it over, you know, or no second thing to light it on fire or to break it into bits. Everything that you can do with things in the creation can't be done to you, to the Adhishtana. Not even Ishwara can do, because Ishwara has this exact Adhishtana that is yourself. And so, when they say, through knowledge, shravana manana nididhyasana, through the wielding of the pramana, when the maya is destroyed, means recognized as mitya, not as an existent entity different from the self, then the self alone remains. Okay? It's just like saying with a clay pot, there's only clay, and everybody will nod. Even though we experience the pot, there's only clay, even though we experience the pot. We do experience the pot, but there's only clay there. That's knowledge. That's an understanding. That's mitya, to understand satya mitya, and that's a really good example for it. And so now, having said all this, there's a doubt that introduces the next verse. And the doubt, I'll just tell you in English, in the Kaivalya Upanishad, there's a verse, and he's taking a section of the verse, and it says, having gained this knowledge, jnatva, having known that I am Brahman, I am that Brahman that is being revealed in that verse, I am that Brahman, which is being revealed there in the Kaivalya Upanishad, this few verses before, up to that point, the knowledge is, I am that Brahman, and having known that, having known iti, that I am Brahman, that Brahman which is being revealed here in the Upanishad, then what? Sarva bandhaihi pramuchyate. Then, having known that, I become free of all bondage. Sarva bandhaihi. Bandhas are the bondages. I become free of all bondage. And so, what the questioner says here is that thus this has been, this statement has been stated in many different ways by many of the Shrutis. You gain self-knowledge, and by gaining self-knowledge, you become free of bondage. So then, this is the problem. He says, moksha-sya jnana-pula abhidhanat. This means that it is stated clearly that the pula, the fruit, of knowledge, jnana-pala, of knowledge, is moksha. Moksha is the result of jnanam. Jnanam, in fact, is moksha. So if the fruit of knowledge is moksha, and moksha is defined as bandha-nirvritti-lakshanaha, if moksha is defined as the removal of bondage, okay, then he has a problem. He says, that being so, the paramatma visheshanasya tatpalata, how can we say that the self is the paramatma? Desha kala vastu aparicheda. Because there's two things, you know, there's yourself, and then there's yourself that through moksha, through knowledge, gains liberation, which means it becomes freed of the bondage, right? So there's a self that is bound, and then through knowledge, that self becomes unbound. That's what you're saying. So how can a bound self be called the Paramatma? How can you say that, you know, the self which is subject to bondage and then requires moksha to become free, how can you say that that self is non-dual, is deshakalavastu paricheda, it has no limitations in any way. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense. He says, this is untenable. So having stated this doubt, then we have this verse. So repeat after me. Advayanandarupasya Sadvayatvanchadukhita Pandav prokta swarupena Stitir muktiritiryate So Sandeep. Advaya ananda rupasya sadvayatvam cha dukhita bandha paroktaha swarupena stitihi muktihi iti iriyate. So here he says, for the one whose nature Advaya ananda rupasya, genitive, so 6-1. For the one whose rupa, here's nature, for the one whose nature is advaya ananda. Advaya means non-dual. Ananda means limitless fullness, that unrestricted being. That's a way to think of ananda, because instead of defining it as bliss, it's this me, the self that I am, without any bondage, without any restrictions, without any negative competition. Like, say, if you've got a dukkha vritti, there's your own being, but then limited as though by the dukkha vritti, limited as though I mean mixed in with the dukkha vritti, with sorrow or suffering or agitation or a sense of the finality of dying, of birth and dying, so that your own nature, from the standpoint of the mind, becomes restricted in a way, or influenced or conditioned by the vrittis that are born ajnana vrittis. And those ajnana vrittis create suffering and sorrow and dukkha. And then from the standpoint of the jiva who doesn't have self-knowledge, then I take on those limitations to myself and the emotions that they cause, right? The limitations, the obstructions, and the emotions that come along with those are those strictures to my own being, which is actually like the sun to the water buckets, you know? This is the, myself is the luminary for all of these things, but there's no viveka between the two. And so I become limited by all of the limitations that are there for samsara. So what he says is, the advaya ananda, the non-dual ananda, my own swarupa. So for the one whose rupa, whose nature is advaya ananda, there is sadvayatvam. Sadvayatvam just means the one who has that duality. There is a sense of being dual. You know, with me, if I take this is myself, then what comes along with me, right, is duality, because I'm not one without a second. I'm one of an infinite number of other things. And so I have that, obviously, that duality. Even from the standpoint of my upadhi, there's literally, I would say, countless, or you could probably get away with saying limitless, because everything is infinitely divisible. So I'm just a product of countless or limitless duality, division, you know. This upadhi is itself limitless in its duality, and then it's living amidst limitless duality. So there's no end to it. So for me, there is this, the bondage of the duality, because everything that exists within duality comes into being and goes out of being. And there is the state of being, of suffering. Two things here for the Sanskrit people. Do you see this? Sadvayat tvam, tvam affects, and dukkita. Tvam and ta are abstracts, and they will take on the genitive, that what they're referring to. So the tvam or ta says this means the being, the state of being. So here, the state of being with duality, having duality, or being a product of duality. for the Advayananda Rupasya, for the one whose nature is non-dual ananda, there is the state of duality, of being dual, and there is dukkita, the state of being a dukkhi. Dukkha means suffering or sorrow. Dukkhi comes from dukkhin, the one who has suffering, the one who has sorrow, the one who is unhappy. So the state of being bound by time and space, desha kala vastu, paricheda. Paricheda means circumscribed by or limited by. That's the dvaya. I'm limited in all ways. I'm spatially limited, I'm time-wise limited, and I'm limited in terms of the qualities I have and don't have. So that's the sadvaya. The dukkita is I'm subject to being one who suffers. Remember dukkhi? Dukkhi means from dukkhin. In affects means the one who has whatever the noun is. So dukkhin is one who has dukkha. So I'm a dukkhi. I'm subject to become one who suffers and one who is sorrowful. So both of these are there. And so what this says is when both of these are there, for who? The Advayananda Rupasya, for the one whose nature is non-dual, ananda, when both of these are there, this bondage that exists within duality and being one who suffers, bandha proktaha, that's called bondage, right? That's called bondage. Bandha is bondage. So, and what's interesting here, because there's Advaita in this verse, it's really nice. It's just listen to what it says. This is who we're talking about. We're talking about Brahman, the Atma, that is Advaya, non-dual, means one without a second. Ananda means limitless. Ananta, ananda, ananta. But why we say ananda, because it's my being, which is non-dual, is totally unrestricted. There's no second thing. And that is what we call ananda, the totally unrestricted nature of myself, which is non-dual. And so that's called Advaya Ananda. So this says the limitations brought about by duality and all of the variety of things that and all of the suffering for this non-dual, limitless self, one whose nature is that, that is what is called proktaha bandha. That is called bondage. Then he says, Swarupena stittihi muktihi iti iriyate. Iriyate means is called, is named. So he says, Swarupena, abiding as oneself, just being oneself, stittihi, remaining as oneself, you know, not seeing oneself from the standpoint of all of these upadis, from the standpoint of mitya, but rather just being of maya, not seeing oneself through the lens of maya, just simply being oneself. Stittihi means just to abide as, to be. Swarupena stittihi, to just abide as one's own nature, as one's own self. Muktihi iti iriyate. That is called liberation. Okay. So what is so nice here? The Advayananda Rupasya is the same one, the non-dual, unimpeded Atma, one without a second, is bound. There's the bond, we say that same Atma is bound and is liberated. The non-dual self, which is on limitless Ananda, is bound and it is liberated. So when it is bound, when is it bound, when it is liberated? Well, we have to look into that in the next verses. But just to think about this, what is non-dual? What is free of time and space? What is free of any type of duality? Because advaya, non-dual, is in direct contradiction with sadvayatvam, with the state of being dual. So if something by its nature is ananta, limitless, and one without a second. Now, the state of being bound, of being dual, you mean, subject to birth and death, for one that is non-dual and is limitless, what is going to cause that? How can something whose swarupa, whose nature, is limitless, non-dual, ananda, how can that become something which is dual? It's like asking what is non-dual to become dual. How can what is non-dual become dual? And if something is non-dual, one without a second, it can never become dual. In fact, there can never be a second thing. Because if there was a second thing, there's me that I'm claiming to be non-dual, and then there's these things that aren't non-dual. Do you see the problem? Here, I am non-dual, and then, of course, all these other things are dual. But all those other things that are dual make me dual, because non-dual means one without a second. Right? There's no room for anything else then. And so what are all of these things if I, in fact, am non-dual? And then if I look at, in fact, if that's my swarupa, I am non-dual, then all of these things that are dual cannot have and belong to the same order of reality. There can't be one non-dual thing and then a bunch of dual things. Let me put it like this. There cannot be one non-dual, even saying one is ridiculous. Okay. There can't be something which is not non-existent. Non-existent doesn't exist. So there can't be something which we say is non-dual, one without a second, and then be subject to duality. What is that duality going to be then? And so either the Shastra is mental, you know, something off, something not logical, or we have to analyze the nature of what we think is dual. That's why, in order to really understand the Vedanta, to recognize it, this world, you know, that we experience, and we experience it from within it, unless we're the Ishvara Upadhi, we experience it through the Jiva Upadhis. And then the Jiva Upadhis also, definitely, every part of the Jiva Upadhi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, are definitely dual. And they're in dual relationship with everything else. Right? And so everything, from the standpoint of Ajnanam, everything that I experience fits in only to duality. Let me put it this way. Everything that I can have a vritti of, everything that I objectify, including my body and my mind and my sense organs, all of the vrittis, all of the moods, all of the emotions, all of my relationships, they all exist within duality, and I do too. Right? So now I am dual. Everything that I experience is dual, I am dual. So what has to happen? What has to happen in order for me to recognize I am non-dual? The one you take yourself to be dual, now have to recognize that I am non-dual. How is that going to happen? Because there is nothing in this creation, right, at all, zero, zero, that is non-dual. The only thing that is in the creation is the manifestation of infinite duality. And all of my sense organs are pramanas for the experience of this infinite duality through my five sense organs. And then also having different types of instruments that can give me a long more distance and see smaller and smaller things. We have all kinds of instruments for it. But all of these instruments really only are at the service of duality. And so when I'm praying for something else, when I become a mumukshu, one of the reasons I become a mumukshu is because I have recognized the experience, the limitations of duality. That's really a totally recognize the limitations of duality in terms of the nature of this creation, including my own body, mind, sense organs, everything, all of my pramanas, everything, you know, is subject to coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. And so there is basically no moksha at all for me. I can only be a maintenance person, you know, trying to do my best as they do in the first portion of the Vedas. Here I am in the creation. This is how to have the maximum amount of what we call, you know, kind of an apekshika, a relative moksha. It's not really a relative happiness, relative ananda. But then relative ananda always comes to an end because everything in duality comes to an end. So the vision of the first part of the Vedas is let me teach you what you can achieve in this world of duality. By doing this, this, and this, you know, by doing your nitya naimittika karmas, and by doing a tremendous amount of upasana and different types of meditation and tapas, the highest you can go is to Swargaloka. You're still within duality, but within that duality you can enjoy as much sukha as can possibly be given within duality. By having an upadhi that doesn't get old and die, and that is never wanting, is always in the prime of youth, you know, of mature youth, and never gets hungry or thirsty, your desires are always fulfilled, so your mind always has shanti, getting exactly what you want as you want it. There you have to live that way for hundreds of thousands of years, and then of course when the kalpa comes to an end, then you start over again. That's as much as you can get. That's quite a bit. That's as far as you can go. Within this loka, by following dharma, doing your nitya naimittika karmas, you can get a certain level of apekshika sukham, relative sukha. That's what you can get. Okay? And so, if you can do all of that, there is still the problem of being subject to change, of suffering birth and death, suffering old age and illness, and suffering the loss of your loved ones. It's a kind of an endless enforced dukkha within duality. There's not much you can do about it. And so say you want to, you recognize these limitations, and you want to know is there something more. It's like what Nachiketas in the Katha Upanishad asked Lord Yama. Is there anything that is free of this duality? Is there anything about me that is free of the pairs of opposites? Is there anything about me that is free of dharma and adharma? Is there anything that about me that survives death? That was what he asked in that detail, all of those little points, he asked Lord Yama. And Lord Yama said, don't ask me that. Even the gods, the devas, don't know that. I can give you this and this. You know, that don't ask for that. I can give you these things and these things and these things. And he has offered all kinds of sukha, potential sukhas. And Nachiketa said, no, because they'll just burn out my senses and I'll die. And it's back where we started. It's not enough. And you, as the Lord of Death, should be able to tell me this. And so Bhagavan was finally very pleased. Yama was very pleased. And he taught him. So what did he teach? You know? He taught that this sadvaya, this state of duality, this state where everything is changing and everything is subject to birth and death, he revealed the nature of all of this first, which we call adhyaropa, just made it all clear, and what this universe is like and how it all functions, and all, made that all clear, and then reduced it to mitya. He reduced it to mitya. But to reduce it to mitya, to reduce this whole duality to mitya, there has to be a recognition of what is actually satyam. I can't say, this is maybe Krishnamurti's problem that's discussed in some circles, is that what if I reduce all of this to mitya? But mitya is meaningless unless you know what is satyam. Because it's basically, if I reduce all of this to mitya by showing you how it's infinitely divisible, everything is infinitely divisible, Everything comes into being and goes out of being, being bordered by non-existence. What if all of that is clear and you're going, that's true. That's true. There is nothing stable here at all. And everything, you know, is bound infinitely in terms of time, infinitely divisible. There really is no reality here. This really is mitya. But you can't use the word mitya unless you have an adhishtana. So all you're getting then is, yeah, this is not real, and this is, it's like peeling an onion. You never get to the bottom of it, you know, and all the way through, as you take the onion peels off, there's just more onion there, but it keeps going, 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 and everything that you thought to be real is being discarded, discarded, discarded into an infinite regress. So what has to happen here is the mityatva of this creation has to be recognized as I discover what is actually satyam. What is actually satyam? What is actually real? And now when I discover through the pramana, through the teaching, when I discover that it's me, this conscious being that I am and have always been, because free from time, if I'm subject to time, I immediately become an object in the creation. So I have to recognize myself as the sat itself, as being itself, as consciousness itself, not something objectifiable within time and space. I have to recognize I simply am, and I am the invariable. In every experience I have, I am changelessly present. All things come and go, all things come and go in me. I am the adhishtana. I am the sat. I am the reality, the being, which all these things, everything within duality enjoys, so that it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, no exception. Every vritti in my mind, it is, it is, it is, it is, no exception. But I am the isness, not them. They come into being and go out of being. All experience, every vritti. It comes into being and goes out of being. I am the being. I am the being. When I recognize that I am this me, this innermost pratyagatma, the one that cannot be objectified, that I am actually the satyam. I am that, the one that is. Okay. Now it is this me that is advaya, because non-objectifiable, not a little thing that exists within time and space. That means I'm little. I'm a little thing in this infinite time and space. Here I am. That's objectifiable. What is sat, what is actually existence, is not going to be objectifiable. If it's objectifiable, then it's going to come into being and go out of being. You know, it's going to be subject to all the limitations of anything that exists within time and space is subject to. Desha, kala, vastu, paricheda. Everything within time and space, it's limited by, everything within duality is limited by space. You're in one space, not another. It's limited by time. You're existing here, but last century you weren't here, and probably in 10, 20, 50, 100 years you won't be. And so, limited by time. And then also limited by vastu. You only have some qualities, not all qualities, right? You have some good qualities, some bad qualities, you have some vibhutis, and you have some things that are kind of weak, down flailing down here. That's the situation. If your being is something that exists here, it actually, let me put it this way. This here has no being. In this world that we experience, it has no being. It depends upon being. It depends upon being to have being. It has no being of its own. It can't. It can't have a being of its own because it can't come into being and out of being from non-existence. Non-existence doesn't exist. And so it must be dependent upon something which is not dependent on which itself does not come into being and go out of being. It has to end there. Okay, if something, this thing depends upon this thing which lasts a little longer than this thing, if this thing depends on this thing which lasts a little longer than that thing, but it goes into an infinite regress that is in the end still bordered by non-existence. See what I mean? And so that's not going to work. That means if at the bottom of everything is non-existence, then what is here on the ascending layers? There are no ascending layers because there's no existence. There's nothing. There's not a red existence or a yellow existence or a desk, you know, a desk non-existence. Here's the non-existent desk. Here's the non-existent jar, you know. It's an absolute logical impossibility. And yet, the truth is, when we analyze all of this, it is existence, 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 existence. You cannot have an experience that is away from existence. The existence, though, is the invariable. Existence doesn't come into being and go out of being. If existence came into being, then its parents are non-existence. That can't be. Existence comes into being from what? From non-existence. No, cannot do. Can't happen. And so you, the invariable, right, are the one who takes yourself to be dual and takes yourself to be a dukkhi. Why? The very Advayananda, that is me, takes myself to be dual and sorrowful. But that's not even true. Because non-dual, me, my being, non-dual, limitless me, never changes. It's the invariable. So I'm not taking myself to be anything. I'm just simply myself. And so whose problem is this? It's not going to be the problem if there's an Advayananda self, you know, non-dual, limitless, fullness, the fullness of my being, if that is really who I am, then for me, because Advaya, because non-dual, there is no problem at all. There's no second thing to even give me a problem. If there's no second thing, what's the problem? Even I don't even have a mind. Oh, I'm a non-dual mind. No, you're not a non-dual mind. A mind is just a series of vrittis. It exists within duality. And so the problem is this. There is no moksha or bondage or, you know, bandha. There's no moksha or bondage for me, for the Atma. Because there's no second thing there's no problem. There's no second thing. I simply am non-dual me, non-dual. There's no second thing there. There's no mind thinking, oh, I'm so unhappy, you know, or, oh, I'm subject to birth and death, or my mind keeps changing. That's all exists within the creation. Like if you have an imagination. Say you have an imagination or a dream. All those dream characters have whatever karma they have in going through whatever problems they're going through. But the one who's the adhishtana of that dream has no problem at all. The problem only occurs from within the mithya, not from the adhishtana. So I have never I could never be liberated, and I've never been bound because there's no second thing there to do either one of those things. There's not who's going to come around and liberate me, and liberate me from what? There's no second thing. And so my nature already is the ananda that I seek. I already am the being which everything enjoys, so there's no limitation in terms of time. There's no limitation in terms of dukkha. Dukkha is a limitation because it's kind of the antithesis of my nature, and it's very uncomfortable. But it's not uncomfortable for me, for the Atma. I just simply, because I'm conscious being, that dukkha and sukha get illumined. But from my standpoint, you know, I'm not doing anything and I'm not experiencing any of that either because non-dual. The sense organs, the mind, the subject-object relationships, everything, all relationships, everything exist within Maya. Maya comes into manifestation along with all the jivas, sustained for some very long period of time, and then resolves and then breathes like this from beginningless time. And this is the jivas within in any given kalpa takes birth after birth after birth after birth based upon the karmas, you know. But Brahman, the self, is not taking birth after birth after birth. The self is not becoming manifest when the creation becomes manifest. The self, yourself, just simply is. It's not doing anything at all. And yet, like a king, we use this example sometimes, it rules, I'm going to say a queen, like a queen, okay? She rules the kingdom, not doing anything. Sometimes they use this king, queen example. You know, because the king can just sit there, kind of like the Lion King, just sit there and everything rotates just because of the presence. So for me, for the self, there, I am the very fullness and the being that I seek. I am what I seek, but I'm not seeking it. I say I am what I seek from the standpoint of self-ignorance, where because this Maya Upadhi depends totally 100% upon me for its consciousness and its being. It depends totally upon me. Then, of course, this Jiva Upadhi naturally takes itself to be me because it is me. It's just that I'm not it. I'm its Adhishtana. And so when this verse, when it says, so it's such a pretty nice verse, it says, for the one who is, this me, the self, that is Advaya, non-dual, and is Ananda, there is this state of being dual, taking oneself to be dual, and the state of being sorrowful, right? And that is what we call bondage. Whereas just abiding from my own standpoint is my own nature, that's what we call moksha. But whether we call it bondage or moksha, we're saying that we're giving these two conditions for the same non-dual Atma, which means this duality. There's a duality here between being free and not being free. So that being free and not being free has to belong to the Jiva Upadhi, which is suffering from beginningless ignorance, and yet at the same time suffering from beginningless ignorance, my self remains always the same. The me, whether for a jnani or an ajnani, the self, the Advayananda, is the constant. It is the invariable. And it, from the standpoint of the limited jiva, who is suffering from ignorance, then it takes itself, of course, to be me, but then it just experiences me. The aparoksha nature, the self-evident nature of myself, is always there as the invariable. But because it superimposed this body, mind, sense organs upon me, then I become someone who's subject to death, subject to birth and death. I become somebody who is moody. Whatever happens to be the mood or the emotion in my mind, that's me. That's how I'm feeling. I'm so unhappy today, or so depressed or sorrowful today. Yesterday I was really happy. That was really nice to have a nice day. So all of this samsara is going on, but only from the standpoint of the upadhi, from the standpoint of the self, the one self that is the self of me and the self of you, myself, which is yourself, which is yourself, which is the self of all beings, which is Ishwara's self. For that self, there's no limitation at all. There's no bondage and there's no liberation. So there's no becoming, gaining liberation. There's no becoming free from bondage. And so that's how this fellow's, the questioner's question is being answered. He sees that there's a self. Here I am, the self, you know. I am through knowledge, I am getting rid of, destroying the bondage. But if the bondage has to be destroyed in order for me to be liberated, then that doesn't make any sense. There's no Paramatma there. Paramatma means a self that has no restriction, deshakalavastu aparicheda. That doesn't make any sense. If I have to go from bondage to liberation, right? Then I exist within time and I have to do things to get there. You know, how could that be possible? And so that Acharya would say, excellent question. Excellent question. It certainly would not be possible. It would not be possible. Because then you yourself would be bound by time. You are always liberated. And so because you are always liberated, there is never any bondage for you to have to be liberated. Because your nature already is completely free. And so this bondage and liberation, in the Mandukya it will say that these dualities, like bondage and liberation, like the guru and the sisha, the mother and the child, or the husband and the wife, the sister and the brother, all of these dualities are mitya. It's all mitya. It has its own vyavaharika, empirical reality, Ishwara Srishti. There's tremendous amount of pratibhasika reality too, our own projections and all of that. All of these, this whole creation, subjective and objective, Ishwara Srishti and Jiva Srishti, all is mitya. Mitya means what? That it has one non-dual me as its adhishtana, but it itself has no being of its own. We call it mitya instead of saying it's non-existent, because we experience it. Otherwise, we'd say it's tucham. Tucham means absolute non-existence, because it has no existence. I am its existence. But because it's here and we experience it, we have to give it a different order of reality from absolute non-existence, which can't be experienced. So it's not even in the running, because we can never have any experience of it. We only use it to make mitya clear. So, now he has to unfold this a little bit more. Explain it more.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.
We're going to have that. You're all going to.